Hello, everybody. My name is Maria Elena Gutierrez. I am the director of the VIEW Conference here in beautiful Turin, Italy. It is an enormous pleasure to welcome you to today's interview with four amazing people from Luca, the latest movie from Pixar. We have Daniela Strikleva. We have David Ryu, Diana Marsiliese, and Tim White, last but not least. I would like to ask you just a simple question. What inspired you to go into animation?
Animation, because I've always loved film. I think my first love was film from when I was a little kid, watching Charlie Chaplin with my dad. He took me to see Indiana Jones when I was way too young. But then I discovered that there were animated films and that somebody actually drew them and that somebody made these things move and that imagined them. So it goes back to a very early age for me. And that's it. I fell in love with it and studied it and, you know, worked really hard to get to this place.
My mother used to take us to all the Disney movies when they came out in the theater. And I loved them. I loved animation from very, very early on. And I would come home and I would try to draw the characters from the movie. You know, and I would think about other stories they could be in. And I would master drawing like Lady from Lady and the Tramp. And so I always loved animation and art. And so when it came time to work, this is what I wanted to do.
My story really aligns with both Danny's and Kim's, which is, it started at a young age for me as well. I was in second grade when I made a formal announcement to my parents that I wanted to be an animator specifically. And I think they were a little bit like, oh, all right. My mom started taking me to the library every Saturday so I could pull out books and try to understand what it was. But I think the kicker for me is that I grew up on cartoons. I loved cartoons. And my parents told me that adults make these like as a job. So I started to bring pieces of paper onto the school bus and I would use the window as a light table. And I would actually like draw a face and then draw another one underneath with a different expression and flip them really fast. I mean, I was that kid, you know? So this was inevitable. I'm very happy to be here.
I think like everybody else, I always kind of loved animated film. I loved kind of classic Disney films. I also remember just loving kind of classic visual effects. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen Star Wars. And I've always been into kind of math and science, and I've loved computers. And after kind of realizing, oh, you know, computers can be a part of making these images, and kind of math and science can be a part of like making beautiful things. It was just super exciting. And you know, when I started at Pixar, I started kind of in our R&D department, and have just kind of over time worked my way over to the movie making side, which has been kind of just an amazing experience.
Scopa! We can go anywhere, do anything. We just gotta stick together.
We underdogs have to look out for each other, right?
Underdogs! To say l'amore. This is gonna be the best summer ever. L'amore. Io son felice. We'll ride down every road. See the whole world together. It'll be amazing. But there's just one thing.
Whoa, 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 wait! Did you see that?
No one can find out.
Please don't take my sunshine away.
Where did you boys say you were from?
Let's start talking about the visual style. There's the underwater world, the upper world, art world, and there's also the style, which is radically different in the dream sequences.
You know, it's an interesting challenge on this movie because usually at Pixar, we create a film that's set in a magical world like Monsters, Inc. And you go to that world and you spend time like just marveling at this imaginary place. Here, we created a fantastical world only to challenge you to fall in love with Italy, you know? And I think the first thing that kind of colored that, like how much love and color can we put into the Italian side of the above water side of things was to set it in the 1950s and to kind of approach it from a almost love letter postcard kind of collective memory. There was a lot of the storybook feel too that Enrico was, you know, he draws with watercolor, he paints with watercolor, he draws with this very kind of imperfect, lively line, and it's also in his storyboards, and that's where everything starts from. So above water, it's that kind of charming storybook, colorful, inspired by the Cinque Terre sort of feel. Underwater, again, you go back to the story, you know, it's a simple life. They're, the sea monsters are farmers. They're very beautiful. And Deanna, I'm sure, can talk about that, kind of the difference between the humans and the sea monsters. But we wanted to keep the beauty to them. The world is very simple, again, inspired by Liguria and the underwater there. But it's like kind of this world in motion. And I think, Kim, maybe you can talk a little bit about the differences with the lighting, because that was such a huge challenge for you guys.
I think, like you were saying, Danny, we were able to use some of what we were seeing there in the Cinque Terre to kind of, you know, emphasize it to help underscore what was going on in the story. And I think like the underwater stuff, I remember you were showing us images from Bambi and saying, look at the kind of soft, beautiful, like, you know, the way the colors go together and you know, how beautiful that world is. And then bringing some of that into the Merc and how, you know, Luca's world is limited. Like you were saying, it's beautiful, but you can't see far. And we would, and in the Cinque Terre also, the Merc is pretty heavy there. So we use that to kind of have things go back into silhouette, to kind of have a little more restrained palette. It's not as exciting. Those warm colors that you do see in Porto Rosso, they really don't exist down there. The lighting is soft. You know, we played it like it's mostly top down for the most part. There's not a huge, you know, angle changes in the light. There's not a lot of contrast. And then when you get above water, we're able to bring in a lot of those warm colors, different times of day, the sparkle across the water, just to make it look as beautiful as we could. And like Danny was saying, you know, we're really pushing the colors, especially above water, so that you see those colors in town. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of technology in that water, you know, to get it to look the way it should, like the caustics and all of that, which were all elements that we were looking at together and looking at with Enrico and saying, okay, these caustics are simplified. This is the kind of shapes that we want. Is this the way we want it to look?
The environments look real. It's uncanny. The water hitting the pebbles.
When we first looked at the water and we looked at real water and kind of like the really stylized test of what we wanted to do with the sinuous simple shapes, we're like, wow, real water is so detailed that almost feels kind of fake now to us. So we've actually simplified things so much. But the fact that, and I've heard more people say that it's hyper real, means that it's believable and we've done something right.
When you go for a look or you go for a style, and, you know, like our characters were like the first thing, they put this stake in the ground of, this is the kind of language we're going for. Everything has to follow it. And it's funny, like if you look at our water, it's definitely not realistic. if you look at Luca water and you look at Finding Dory water, we pulled kind of images of Finding Dory water at the very beginning and just kind of pieced apart what was in there. It's like, it's so kind of detailed and crispy and kind of visual information everywhere. And that's what real water is. And that fits in what they're trying to do in the world that they've built. We've taken bits of kind of the nature and the motion and the character of real water, but we've edited out lots of information. Our effects teams and lighting people kind of worked really hard to figure out, like, how can we isolate these shapes? How can we layer them? When I hear you say, like, oh, wow, that water looks real, I think what that means is that we were able to edit that down. We were able to kind of caricature that and not have it kind of jump out at you like, wow, that water looks weird and fake.
You know, everything on this film everything, right down to the last prop, was heavily designed, like with care. The cohesion in this film, from the design through to the animation, is beautiful, and also lyrical. And they gel so beautifully together. Everything just feels so natural and organic. Where the characters are concerned, right from the beginning, it was, you know, these ideas. I remember Danny's first like presentation that was just about the film on the whole, and it was really just about playfulness and expressiveness and directness. So, but with this really strong undercurrent of sophistication. So when I went to design the characters, I had all of these things in mind. And the first stake in the ground was really just these bold, bold shapes. Where the sea monsters were concerned, I was looking at a vintage scientific illustration, Japanese block print, and a lot of folk art that's hand carved. And really what those things have in common are bold shapes, because within them are all these rich, beautiful textures and patterns. So again, that was really the first stake across the board for the characters above and below the sea. And then we have all of these other things that kind of evolved that became other stakes in the ground for our Vespa style. We have, you know, no sharp corners, no straight lines. Everything is soft and youthful and has a beautiful flow. We decided not to carve into the forms of our characters. So there's no like clavicles or indentations at the knees, nothing that would, again, dig in or cause a harsh shadow. All the shapes of our characters are smooth and clean, again, to just support these textures. And then within the textures, we built in all this beautiful irregularity because we didn't want it to be computer perfect. We even, you know, down to the cuffs on Julia's pants, they're offset and they're a different shape. We didn't want anything to be matchy-matchy, perfect or symmetrical. There's a lot of asymmetry you see in the shapes of the mouths. The mouths don't pinch, right? And so when we moved into animation, I made it a point to make sure that the animators understood the history of our designs and why we made certain decisions, so that they could then interpret all of those principles and fold them into the animation. So when I talk about all these beautiful textures and bold shapes, that really translates to very strong, bold posing choices and texture within the timing of the animation and juxtaposing, you know, areas of high energy and activity with, you know, quiet and calm.
There was a particular challenge, speaking of transformation, that you had to design Luca twice. And we thought it was so hard to design Luca, you know, like he was a bit of an introvert. And it's like, how do you find this character who doesn't have a very active things to do at the very beginning of the movie? Like his movie grows and he grew with the dream sequences, you know. But Deanna worked really well in collaboration with our sculptor to design Luca human and design Luca sea monster, and then to find a flow. Everything about that round style that you draw, D, is like, it had to do also with the flow of swimming underwater. You know, these sea monsters are so beautiful and kind of sinuous. Your design is representing kind of what they were supposed to be as well. You know, it's not just a something slapped on, but it was from within, which I really loved that you did.
Well, thank you. And it's true what Danny's saying, you know, for every character, there were two, right? Two Albertos, two Danielas, two Lorenzos. So yeah, it was a lot of work. And I'm so happy that it was more of a, let's make them feel the same, sea monster Luca and human Luca, not exactly look the same. I mean, we had some landmarks in place because of transformation, but it was more important that they felt like the same character. And again, I just really love that extra layer of sophistication. They're deceptively simple, very deceptively simple, because in drawing them, I mean, you're off a few millimeters, it's a completely different character. It's a very delicate thing, the balance of these features.
Can you tell me a little bit about the bicycle sequence when they're having the race and there's all this rain? pouring down on the town. What were some of the major challenges you faced on that? It really seems like a visual effects tour de force.
Rain is hard, and it's a kind of a giant lift for our effects and lighting teams. Rain is an example of something that is complex, something that we wanted to kind of control. It's the balance. We wanted to read super clearly, but we didn't want it to take over the frame, and, you know, and stylistically it needed to fit in with everything else, you know, that we had done. And I think, you know, we wanted to always support the storytelling and support the emotion. So kind of pretty early on, we sat down with Enrico and kind of Kim and our effects teams, worked with Enrico to kind of map out what the rain should feel like kind of at any moment in these sequences. You know, it starts out in a pitter-patter, it kind of ramps up to a big deluge kind of in that climactic moment up at the tower, and it kind of supports that dynamism of the downhill and then calms down. And we developed kind of different rain looks for each one of those kinds of situations. We also, you know, kind of to support the motion and that dynamism, we would choreograph kind of what the rain was doing. So, you know, in really like fast kind of motion shots, we would dress the rain at a diagonal to kind of support that. And, or when we were like going into camera, we would have the rain kind of be radial out to kind of support that line of action. It's a technique you see a lot in 2D animation, but something that Enrico kind of really wanted us to chase. Yeah, we were always kind of looking to support the story and kind of support the sequences. In terms of, you know, there was a lot of pipeline building. So to support this, you know, it's so many shots. Our effects and lighting teams did lots of work in kind of Houdini and Houdini Engine and Katana to build rigs that could do all these things. We could kind of layer those things in and get these broad strokes in quickly so that we were always looking at it together. You know, Enrico was always kind of looking at the full swath of these sequences so that we could kind of, you know, be evaluating it kind of always as a film.
Lighting wise too, it was a challenge because we wanted it to not feel cold. You know, Enrico was really like, it needs to feel like summer rain. I don't want it. You know, there's a lot of color in our movie, and it's very easy to think, oh, we should make it blue, or we should push more color in here. And the moment you did that, it felt like winter time. And it's like, no, this is summer rain. And so I think there was a lot of work to figure out what the colors would be and what the atmosphere would feel like for those sequences. And then, like you're talking about, David, there was also controlling, like, where are the splashes on their faces? How many are there? Which shots are there? Because you don't want a ton. Again, it's that same balance between detail and simplicity. You know, it would be easy to just fill the frame with a lot of splashes and a lot of detail, but it was all quite choreographed throughout that whole sequence. And the sense of depth in the rain, you know, getting it there to feel like there's bright raindrops more in the foreground, and then going back and controlling that as well. It was a lot of work. And I think it's interesting because it came at the end of production for us. And so I tend to think, like, you know, everybody's been working together. We really understand the world and the characters, and you know, built up into this place for that rain sequence. So in a way, you look at that as, you know, as a DP, and you're like, crud, that's coming at the end. That's a lot of work. But looking back on it, my goodness, thank goodness it did, because we were able to kind of build on what all we'd already been working on to get to that place.
I still want to hear about the dream sequences.
Let's talk about it. They're fun. They're so fun. You know, we started talking about them with Enrico just, you know, they kind of came in production a little bit later. They became this revelation into Luca's character for me. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but it felt like Luca was a very timid character. And once we started seeing inside his head, it was like, oh my goodness, he's got this rich life, and it's getting bigger. His view of the world is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So we start with that bubble underwater where he's trying to figure out like what this boat is. And then you have the beautiful Vespa dream, which was our bigger, kind of maybe the biggest sequence that we had. So it was a way for Enrico to kind of show us the inside of Luca's character, but also visually and stylistically for us to kind of, not indulge, I was going to say indulge, but it's not indulging because it's part of the movie, to kind of have fun with a little bit of surrealism, you know, to go and explore a tone that was even a little bit further than the rest of the film. And that's where all the exaggerated colors come from, those yellow fields. The textures in the skies of a lot of our dream sequences are taken from pastels, from textures that we created. And Dave and Kim can talk about how hard it was to make these textures move. There's even parallax in them. There's so much technology and genius that goes behind in the background of these things. I'll just say that it was a wonderful way to kind of get into a little bit of surrealism, a little bit of like Fellini for kids, if you will. So with that, if you guys want to jump in and talk about the technical side, I mean, but we all work together really closely on this stuff, you know.
We talk about texture in the movie, and there's so many places where we were trying to insert texture. And I think when I think of kind of the dream sequences, like we wanted to dial that to 11, we wanted to kind of seek out opportunities to do that. So Daniela talked about the sky. Our set extensions team basically figured out a way to kind of layer brush strokes kind of on sky, like in space. And so, you know, the shot that comes to mind for me is that first shot when you see Luca kind of driving the Vespa and you look at the sky, you look at the clouds, they have this really like kind of palpable, you know, brushstroke feel. And when you talk about collaboration, I think like when I think about collaboration, I think like that was the one. All those strokes are like individual painted things by Daniela, by Bill Cohn, by kind of, you know, and capturing that particular essence was kind of so important. I love the shot when they go up and you see the moonfish, and the moonfish has this glow around it. And you know, there are lots of ways you can do a glow in CG. You can have a light, you can have a volume, you can do a bloom. What we wanted to do was have a glow that also kind of evoked that texture. So we actually, I think that's a painting by you, Daniela.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow, it's beautiful.
Yeah, like painted a painting, and it has that kind of pastel-y kind of tactileness to it. And then we took it and kind of added parallax and put in special treatments to put glints and kind of glow in it. So I don't know, when I think of the dream sequences, I think we were all kind of like figuring out how to just kind of get that feeling of texturality and kind of just dialing it to 11.
And those were the really collaborative. Like we had small teams in there trying a lot of stuff. I think sometimes when you see animation, or when I do, I see things and I'm like, wow, that's so amazing. Like, how did they do that? And it's hard. You know, I think, you know, you got to try things, especially in a movie like this. And with Enrico, we put a lot of things in where we pushed stuff, yeah. And we showed him and he's like, oh, that's too far. Or, no, go, keep going. And you know, you have a small team of people just trying things and passing it back and forth and meeting in little groups. And that's one of the wonderful things about the dreams, is that each one of them was this collaborative little groups working really hard, and they took a while to do, but they were really satisfying. When I watched the movie, I always wait for them. I'm like, oh, here comes the Saturn dream, you know? Really, it was a great opportunity to get in there, and how does it feel different from the rest of the movie? And lighting, they're a little more flat lit to help it feel a little more, you know, like an illustration to separate it from the rest of the movie. And, yeah, you know, just getting a chance to think about who Luca is.
The opening sequence, you get a sense of fable, you get a sense of magic. And of course, the characters are reinforcing that there's oral tradition, mythology, there's something primordial. And at the end, with the sequence of the train, it's just so beautiful. The rain falling and mixing with the tears of the two boys. Yes, it's about hope, but it's also about sorrow. And it doesn't feel like legend. It doesn't feel like fable.
I hadn't really thought about that kind of beautiful, the way you describe it, where the film starts like a fable. It does. It starts in a very big way, in a small way, but in a big way. I'm so happy that we got to acknowledge our Carta Marina, you know, like we get to see a map and kind of a little bit like the inspiration that Diana drew from so much for the sea monsters. But the film ends in a very intimate way, you know, it shows the big world in which Luca is going, and yet you're with him and you're emotional. Kim, do you want to talk about that? Because I think the lighting does so much at the end of the film, like that emotion, you know, it's a bittersweet moment. There's sun and there's rain, and we always wanted that bittersweetness.
Yeah, I think about the end of the movie, and especially leading up to it, from the rain, you know, to that dinner sequence and then to the end. As, you know, Enrico always said, it's not going to be easy for Luca. You know, he's going out into a world that's hopeful for him. He's excited, but we know that not everyone will accept him, and he's going to have big challenges. And I think it's reflected in the lighting. So, you know, it's a little more complex. It's not like a completely sunny at the train station. We held back. I know earlier he's like, I don't want it to feel too sunny when he's saying goodbye to Alberto and his parents. Make sure it doesn't feel like it's sunlight streaming through there. He wanted to hold back until we got right to the end. And even so, the sun doesn't completely come out of the clouds. You know, it's beautiful and hopeful, but we know there's challenges ahead. So we really tried to walk that line in the lighting, leading all the way up to that moment.
It's mirrored in the animation. So the animator of that last shot, Gwen, brilliant. And what I love about her work in that last shot is that the transformation happens. You guys are talking about that bittersweetness of sun, not quite, clouds in the sky, rain. It's the same. The transformation happens while Luca is kind of in this mix of feelings. You know, he's so sad to be losing his best friend, but he kind of brightens up. He soothes himself because he's also excited. This is very exciting. And I love that he leans out of the train and opens himself up as the train is moving away. You know, it just goes to show you how he's approaching this next phase of his life. He's going to be completely open to it. And he's not afraid. He's unafraid. You know, he is who he is, and he's going to go out and be as brave as he can be.
Can you tell me, you know, what the Vespa symbolizes?
It's easy to simplify the film into two worlds. It's, you know, the underwater world where Luca starts from, and the human world, which is where he's going to end up. But there's also the island. And to me, the island is really special. We don't talk about it a lot because it's not a flashy, but it's almost like a rite of passage. That's where he first meets Alberto. That's where they are at their purest. You know, that's where they're the freest. They're not encumbered by fears. They're not, they still have the hope of children. You know, they don't have that sorrow, that bittersweetness that Luca gets at the end as he comes of age. So in a way, the Vespa represents that freedom. It's that dream, you know, the poster. It's like, hey, we can be free together. And it's a childlike dream, you know, to run around when you're 12 years old from town to town on a Vespa. It's a wonderful dream. He does abandon that dream. He says goodbye to that dream. He says goodbye to Alberto for a more realistic life, you know, as you will. And that's why I love your remark about the end of the movie, that it feels not like a fable anymore, because it's true. Like he grows up, you know. So I think the Vespa, other than, of course, the romanticism, representing the romanticism of the 50s, is what is representing what Luca and Alberto have together as children, you know, before they have to move on.
I also really love the Vespa as a symbol, just all the different kinds of Vespas we have throughout the film. Yeah. You have Hercules, which is, you know, red, flashy, perfect, yeah, obviously for him. Then you have the beautiful ones that the boys build together, which have such charm. And even the one where Julia's like, well, I could get you that. You know, it's turquoise, a little bit of rust. There's so much storytelling, and I love them all.
Luca, with all of his dreams, it's a direct connection to the imagination. We are navigating this movie through Luca. Tell me more about how you use the lighting to give us the Luca viewpoint.
When he comes above, you know, onto land, you know, going from those, like those underwater environments that are a little bit less, you can't see as far, and, you know, it's a little bit more of a muted palette, really pushed, especially in that first sequence when he comes above onto land, how bright it was. And especially the first couple of shots, we kind of pushed it a little bit and then settled it down so that you just get the sense of that, whoa, I'm in a different place. There was a funny balance there because we were pushing a lot of color into the shadows and color into the lights. So there's no white lights on our movie. There's color all over, and just trying to figure out, how does it feel sunny without canting it too far, you know, one direction or the other in terms of time of day. And just everywhere we went, we just pushed color everywhere. Like there's no grays in the movie. And in addition to that, you know, we put, you know, we were talking about detail and simplicity. We were putting, you know, color into the edges of the shadows So you'll see that kind of saturated edge. And, you know, Enrico wanted things to feel handmade. So we were also putting what we called fringe into some of the shadows so that we broke that up with a little bit of a texture. But there are also areas of calm. I know we talked a lot with Danny about this, you know, where do we keep areas of calm and where do we have areas of detail? So it's just not detail everywhere. And finding a way to walk that line so that it feels like a style. So it's not so simple that, you know, that it feels too simple or that the water is too simple, but it's not so detailed that it's too realistic. And so like the sky doesn't have a lot of detail in it. The clouds only have detail mostly at their edges. Talking about this fringe on the shadows, we put it in, but it's not everywhere because there's already detail in the, you know, in the underlying texture. So being strategic about where you add things like that. And then again, looking for opportunities to push color into places. You know, just to say it, that's one of the things about that we noticed about being there in Italy was how much color was bouncing around between the buildings, the colored light coming off the orange and into the shadows and just the color from the sky. It is so beautiful and so inspirational. And it provided us a place to kind of use that for this movie.
I want to ask a question about the design of the town, the props and the clothing and the posters. What specific references did you use to create that?
I'll break it up in two, and maybe Dee can talk about the clothing on the characters, because that's something that doesn't get a lot of recognition, but there's so much love put into that as well to make it of the period. I would say that, you know, on top of the details of paying attention to the buildings, the vernacular of the buildings, the types of windows, all the architectural details that we paid attention to, obviously the graphic design is such a huge part of this movie. And, you know, the posters, it's that love letter to Italian cinema, which was wonderful at the time in the 50s and 60s. Some posters are a direct homage, some are made up by us. There are advertisement posters there, you know, even the street names, like there's so many little little love letters tucked away to certain directors that we like, or to a lot of last names that are typically Ligurian. You know, we wanted to make sure that we're so true to the region. The bar Pittaluga, you know, it's a name that you only see in Liguria. So it's wonderful to kind of pay attention to all those little details. The props, all things that are nostalgic, that are of the 50s, that are of, like, when you think of your grandparents, it's that kind of beautiful patina and materials. So I love that you were mentioning the Vespa, because Ercole's Vespa is the only object that we made to look modern, you know. It is representing modernity. Like when you have those close-ups, it almost looks like a modern Vespa from now, you know, in terms of the textures. So that was on purpose to kind of entice the boys to show off, you know, Ercole's personality, but also to contrast with the rest of the town, which could be the Cinque Terre 5 centuries ago, or it could be now, you know. So we wanted a timelessness to this whole thing. But Dee, do you want to talk a little bit about the background characters? Because there's so much texture in their clothing and in their like, you know, I mean, in their whole personality.
Oh, I think so. They add such richness, I think, to Porto Rosso. And they were really designed as one organism, you know. I kind of designed them all at once because I wanted them to feel like a community. And I made sure that every single character had with them a prop of sorts that would show you their vocation in town, what they did, what they liked to do, who they were. And what I love especially about our background characters is we put a lot of care and thought into the vignettes, you know. So you will see pods, groupings of folks around town, and they pretty much remain in their designated area. But that's really a truth that we found when we went to Cinque Terre. You know, we would go out into the piazza in the evenings, and we would spot like the same groups of folks in the same areas night after night. And it's just like the most charming thing. And when you're dealing with a small town, it's very common to see the same faces over and over again. Why wouldn't you? So we really just leaned into that. As far as the background characters and their clothing, a lot of that inspiration came out of historical photographs. I mean, we had hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds. And, you know, of course, looking at films like Terra Tremma and a lot of Italian cinema from around that time, what we especially loved was the fact that I mean, it would be perfectly okay for the background characters to share a lot of the same items of clothing, the same styles between the women and the men, because they would have made their own clothes. They would have gone to the same tailor or seamstress. It's just very down to earth. So the shapes you'll find are a little bit more rooted, more grounded, a little boxier, you know, thick weighted cuffs, but a lot of asymmetry and charm. We just put so much thought. The patterns really came from a lot of photographs. Jennifer Chang designed those because the shapes were so bold and clean. We could have a lot of fun with the patterns inside. So yeah, and everything down to, you know, the simple gold hoop earrings and the shoes. I mean, research. And I think it all came together so beautifully.
Yeah, we had thousands and thousands of photos, but I love the background characters have that, like the reason why I talk about the clothing is because they are part of the texture of the town, but they are as people part of the texture of the town, you know, like Diana designed them to be like, this is this vignette, this is those people, there's the alimentari owner, there's the chisteria, you know, like basket weaver. And it's like, they're always there and they are the very texture. They are the life of the town. So I love that there's like a literal texture, which is like what they look like, but there's also what they do, which is so wonderful.
And I love that collectively we really got to know them. So everyone's a background character would pop up and we're like, well, there's Johnny again. He's like, yeah. Crazy one. Like we assigned them personalities, felt like we knew them.
When you think about crowds in like animated film, the way that we generally do this is like, okay, we'll build a population of these and we'll just reuse them. Like we have ways of just like putting a bunch of things and we create texture, but that texture is more like noise. You know, whereas I think the challenge in this movie, which I think kind of echoes a lot of what we're doing, is like, okay, we want less, but we want to be so purposeful and we want to use these kind of characters as a way of kind of accentuating all these things about this place and this time.
I want to ask you to leave us with some words of wisdom for filmmakers out there who dream of becoming production designers, directors of photography, VFX supervisors, and character art directors like yourselves. What would you say to them?
I would say stay curious. You know, you have to be curious about the world. And obviously you have to work hard at your craft. Like there's everyone at Pixar is a master of their craft. But what is amazing is that everyone is really curious. They want to learn, they're humble, they want to learn about the world and then transform that into their own art through their own point of view. Like I say this all the time, but if you want to do this job, you have to have a point of view and you have to show us your point of view so that there's something new and interesting, your own take on the world. So that would be my thing, is stay curious, stay true to yourself. And show us your thoughts.
I'm gonna echo what Dani said. I think she always says it so beautifully. I agree. being curious about the world is a big one. I know personally, I love to take walks. You know, you don't have to go too far. You just kind of wander around and notice things. Practice noticing. And notice all the details, just love the world around you and really just know that anything can be a story. Anything can be anything you want it to be. So just exercising that muscle in your head, and in your heart, really. And then as far as character design, you know, it's a lot of drawings. So you're going to definitely want to work on your craft. And that goes back to personally, I think 2D animation, because again, it's a lot of, you know, energetic gestural drawing and structure and personality. So you don't have to be phenomenal at it, but you should understand 2D animation. I think it helps as you're designing a character to understand how it would move.
We talked about how collaborative this process is. And, you know, one thing I loved about Luca was just us all working together. I feel like we really kind of got down and kind of got together to kind of get here and kind of achieve this. And so maybe my advice would be to look for opportunities to kind of really kind of open yourself up to other people, kind of surround yourself with talent and kind of open yourself up to the talent of others and in yourself kind of try to work hard to maximize and kind of give the most that you can give, but also help other people kind of achieve the most that they can achieve. I think kind of, especially when you're at a place like Pixar, it is so collaborative. I think kind of that's a huge part of it.
I would just echo what everyone here is saying. It is a collaborative art form. And I tend to think about, you know, the strength of our movies is in our team and is everyone working together and supporting one another and, you know, putting forward the best ideas and also, you know, like everyone here is saying as well, you know, continue to look at things and think about why you like them, like movies, like why does the lighting or the set design or any of the things support the story, and ask yourself that and be aware and, you know, kind of awake to what you're looking at, even paintings, photographs, everything. Don't limit yourself and learn from all of it.
You got a Bruno in your head.
A Bruno.
Say, silencio, Bruno.
Silencio, Bruno.
Louder. Silencio, Bruno.
Silencio, Bruno.
Silencio, Bruno.
Silencio, Bruno.
Can you still hear him?
Nope, just you.
Good. Now hang on.